Let's go now. A little life out here.
Hello everybody, welcome to the UK Packers Podcast. As usual, I'm your host, that's DDD NFL on the Twitter box, and of course follow the group at UK Packers, or Jesus, you'd have to. This is the second draft special really. So we had Peter on to try talk to why he's such an absolute madman. I just don't understand the physics of it. I don't get how he could write something of such quality. Now again, I'd pucker up. Because I have two legends on the podcast, and we're going to be talking to us all about the draft. We've the author of the UK Packers Draft Guide, Peter Jones, and also Andy Davies, which I believe, lads, are you both sort of Welsh? Can I say that? There's Welsh blood there, is there? Davies? Jones?
I have Welsh roots, yes. Mm. Embedded in the heart of Newport somewhere, but yes.
I was thinking.
Yes, same with me. All my father's side was Welsh.
You see, you can't swing a cat in Wales without hitting a Davies or a Jones. In fact, you're probably like qualified by default to the Welsh rugby team. But we're not going to talk about that, lads. We're going to talk about the Bloomin' Draft is coming up, and this is our first sort of taster. And we're going to talk about offense this week, and then next week we're going to talk about defense. We do this every year. And then 2 days after that, we're going to talk about special teams, which will be a 30-second conversation, which is great. And then we're going to talk about sort of, you know, you're going to hit me with your what you think might happen, the sort of surprises, how could it all go sideways. But before we get to any of that, I want to pick some brains here, because this is what happens every year. This is an insight. It's a peep behind the curtain as such, right? We're going to burlesque you a bit. So we talk for, what, an hour? Before we get on, and just about random stuff, draft stuff, family stuff. And then we do the podcast for like 2 hours, and then we get off the podcast, and then we just can't get off the phone to each other, and we're just always chatting. So I had to cut it short and say, let's stop the preamble and let's get the preamble on the actual podcast. Andy and Peter, obviously, because Peter, you are the definitive voice. You write the draft guide. Ridiculous. But Andy, you said something pretty wild in pre-pod, and I stopped you and I wanted you to say it on the podcast. There's draft nuts, Peter Jones, and there's draft nuts, Andy Davies. And can you tell the listeners what you put in the suitcase when you're going? Where do you even go? Benidorm? I mean, where does the Davies family go? Do you go back to Newport, to the roots? I mean, where are we going?
I'd rather go to Newport than Benidorm, anywhere but Benidorm. Yeah, if I'm on the way out to Mallorca or Menorca or one of the long-haul flights to Mexico, even if I'm going down to sunny Wales in the heart of St. David's, Pembrokeshire, which is where I go every year for my jollies. Yeah, I take draft guides. Yeah, absolutely. All the hard copies I can get in a suitcase, I take my draft guides from years gone by. And what we were talking about is it's the fact that you can look back and review and look at all the things people have said about people, either the ill-informed or the absolutely informed, as Peter is. I find it really interesting. I find it really sort of, great beach reading.
Well, I'm sure the wife thinks you're absolutely mad. But what's your favourite? What's your guilty pleasure, Andy? Is it looking at like, Jesus Christ, how could you be that wrong? Or is it, look, I got that right. And be honest, right? Is there any of them that you look back at and go, do you know what? He was a bust, but I thought he'd make it as well.
Going back sort of a long, long time, you know, when the hard copies were there where you sort of, you get your draft guide in airmail format. I don't know whether Pete, you ever did that, but I certainly did. And, you know, guys like going back as far as Antonio Freeman, who was a fourth round pick and was earmarked as a punt returner early in his career. But you just thought there was something there. Mm. And if you read his bio, you're kind of just, you're pulling on all the potential little green shoots that you're looking at rather than the finished product. And that for me is a good thing, isn't it? And then we were talking about Marshall Newhouse, where I can't remember a worse draft bio of somebody, you know, skinny calves, bad in space, poor power blocker, you know, all that kind of stuff. And yeah, he had a successful-ish NFL career. So just all of it. I just consume knowledge. It's just great to sort of read it. And I don't know about anybody else, but I like to print these things off. You know, it costs you about 40 quid in ink for Peter's guy, doesn't it? But, you know, 320 pages.
We should be sponsored by doing it both. Canon or Kodak or something. You know what I mean? Get an ink deal.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, just pressing that sort of double side button really furiously, aren't you? I've got to get it double sided, otherwise it's going to cost me 40 quid.
Yeah, grayscale, paper quality, low. Yeah, black, trying to white. Get it through the fence. Yeah, I just, at this point, I think we should jump in and apologize to Don McIntyre, because he's a listener out there who always says that he gets the printer ink ready. I'd just love to know what Don's bills are. But what is it at? Like, why, Andy? Why? Why do you take? Why do you print off these draft guides from way back when and look at them? What really gets you about the draft? Because you're a nut about it.
I don't know. It's just a labor of love, isn't it? I think I haven't got the sort of patience or fortitude to do what Peter does, and, you know, 363 days a year to write the bios and the deep dives into every single player. I've always said to you, I don't really start my sort of looking at it till after Christmas, yeah, once we've been knocked out of the playoffs. But I don't know.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah. It does, yeah. It hurts every year. I think that's what it's become, though. It's become a kind of sort of soothing method, isn't it? You know, it's the pain of missing out on yet another Super Bowl, and then you just dive straight back into the draft, and that kind of takes your mind away from it. But yeah, I don't know. It's just that, for me personally, I like to think that you can pick out players that are going to be talented players and successful in the NFL, but also people that you think would be sort of suited to the way Green Bay do things. And I just enjoy doing that. I really enjoy doing that. You know, there's players that we miss out on. Mm. And you can ask yourself the what ifs. And I know a lot of people don't like playing that game, but I really do. I really like playing that game because I think that, you know, it's, there's a lot in that, you know, and I just like it all, really. I like it all. And you can see where, you know, dynasties have been built with New England, for example, and where teams have historically been really poor because you've drafted poor. You know, your personnel's been, you know, been really, really poor. Your player selection's been poor. Your scouting network's poor. And it all folds into the draft, doesn't it? It all folds into talent evaluation. And in any sport, a lot of sports, you know, particularly sort of team sports, that talent evaluation piece is the biggest, you know, denominating factor, isn't it? You know, you look at Manchester United in football at the minute, the reason they're so bad is because their recruitment has been really, really poor. Yeah. You can sort of point towards coaching and systems and all that, but actually it's about bringing the right people into your organization. And that's coaches, players, and all the sort of backroom stuff as well. So the draft forms a massive part of that for me. And it's come so far, hasn't it, over the last 20 years, Peter, in terms of how big pro days have become, how big sort of the combine has become, and so many analysts or potential analysts out there now, isn't there, all afforded opinions about people. So it's become much, much bigger than it ever was. We used to rely on sort of, you know, Sports Illustrated draft hard copies and PFNs and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, I enjoyed it. You're going back as far as Packer Report and getting bits and bobs off there. So, you know, and Peter's weekly newsletter as well. Don't forget that.
I mean, way back in the day. But Peter, look, yeah, obviously the two of yous love it, right? You and Andy, yous have been long the UK Packers goldmine, really, of all draft stuff, because the amount of work that needs to go into it, also the understanding behind it. I sent you a message, Pete, and we were chatting, and I was going to say to you, taking the pee, like, oh, how's that 2025 draft guy going, Peter? I mean, how are we? Like, you know, and you actually were working on it, which is just crazy. And I know you said you were sort of doing bits and bobs, but has your love for it at all waned by, you know, having to produce this article, this massive piece? Now, you don't have to, right? There's no one sort of sitting on you and sort of making you do it. But do you feel that pressure over you to do it? Because, look, I loved playing saxophone. But the minute I went to do it in, you know, in a music school, it just become a pain in the arse doing scales and doing orchestra and, you know, all that kind of stuff. It just became annoying. It sort of took the love out of it. Does it take the shine off it at all?
No, I'm sure there's one day, you know, in early April every year where it gets really difficult. But other than that, no, it really doesn't. And it's because, you know, as you both described, it's just a love of the process.
Yeah.
And I guess to a degree, you're kind of testing yourself, aren't you? You know, you're looking at these players, you're giving an opinion about these players, and you're testing to see, you know, whether those players really are what we think we're seeing. And as Andy described, then you go back a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, however many years later, and go back to see what you and other people have written. And it's fun. It really is. And, you know, it's absolutely players that I've written about either in recent years or talked about in previous years. And you go back and you think, what on earth was I thinking? but at the time, yeah, you know, that's how you saw it. And, you know, and to be fair to all of us, I think everybody that kind of gives their opinion pre-draft, you only have to go back to the Tony Mandrich draft and try and find me somebody pre the Tony Mandrich draft that was saying, don't pick him.
Yeah.
And so it yeah, but it's, you know, to answer your question, it's fun. It really is. As Andy said, it's a labor of love, but we just enjoy it. And like Andy, it is real fun to go back and look at the old ones.
Mm. Yeah, no, like I like the scouting reports for that. You know, like you raised it there, Andy, about Newhouse, and you go back and look at them, and there's some players that have ended up being a roaring success, and they've had pretty mediocre scouting reports as well. So I was looking at this thing today as well, which kind of reminded me of this, and I'd like to pick your brains on it too, is that I was looking at Jude Bellingham, because my kids now are mad into football and they know really abstract stats from like the Greek league. I mean, there's limitless stuff that you can go into. So I was looking at this, you know, the evolution of Jude Bellingham, and like so much of what a player and what they're able to do and how good they are can sometimes stem about their supporting cast. So, you know, Jude Bellingham was great for his boyhood Birmingham club, and then he moves off to Borussia Dortmund, and his game, it's like three different player profiles in the 3 years or whatever that he was there, because sometimes he was overly defensive, sometimes he was overly attacking, other times he was more well-rounded. And now he's become, if you look at his profile again for Real Madrid, looks completely different again. Like, you know, do you look at players, Peter, in college and sort of say like, I don't think people are seeing how good this guy is. And that's because he's not getting the, you know, support that he needs. You know, if you don't have a good quarterback, you can't catch the bloody ball, right? Or, you know, that kind of stuff. Do you get a kick out of evaluating players like that? Is it hard?
Yeah, and that's why you have to be really careful about trying to project college production into NFL production. For all kinds of reasons, whether it's the supporting cast, whether it's the system they're playing, whether it's the school they're at, the conference they're playing in. And that's why you have to look as much as you can at traits and attributes rather than production. You know, in simple terms, if a wide receiver catches 50 out of 50 passes thrown his way, he's probably got good hands. Whereas there may be another guy that catches 150 passes out of 250.
Yeah, yeah.
So one's got a higher production, but probably the hands, you know, obviously depends on where the ball was, et cetera, et cetera. But probably the hands aren't quite as good. So you have to, you know, I think look more at traits and attributes than you do in college production. And also the schools that they played at, right? Because, you know, you look at those players that play in those Power of Five conferences, the SEC, the Big Ten in particular, those two, you know, ACC, Pac-12. You look at players that are in those schools, and they're playing big games for around half of the season, right? And then you look at players that perhaps in other schools where they're playing one or two big games in a season. So. You know, that makes a difference as well. So lots thrown into it.
I think the key word for me is traits, so isn't it? It's what Peter said there. It's the traits, isn't it? And I'm a massive believer in that. And if you think about in Packers terms, I don't know, someone like Terrell Buckley or even Desmond Howard had massive college careers, massive. But how that translated to the NFL was kind of inconsistent, wasn't it, Peter? You know, yeah, Desmond Howard did his return game, but he didn't dominate the receiver position. And Terrell Buckley was a bit of a disaster at cornerback in real terms versus his college career. So you've got, it's those traits, isn't it? And go back to our favourite, you know, Justin Jefferson was, you know, sort of earmarked as a slot receiver at one point, wasn't he? But he had the traits to do everything that he's become. So it's, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And you also have to, before somebody else shouts that I missed one of the Power of Five conferences, Big 12 was the other one that I never got to. absolutely. And the other thing you have to be careful of is just looking at the last year.
Yeah.
So Justin Jefferson is a classic example of lots of people talking about him being a slot receiver coming out of LSU because he played primarily in the slot in his last year in college. Go back 2 years or the year before his last year in college, played primarily on the outside. So this wasn't a guy that was purely a slot receiver. And that's why you just have to be a little bit careful. And the same with, you know, we're probably going to talk about Graham Barton at some point on the offensive line. Guy that's played tackle the last 2 years, started his career at center and was good at center. So that's exactly the same journey that Zach Tom took. So you have to, you know, be careful as well about recency bias.
Yeah. Yeah, which, and look, that you get that in coverage everywhere, right? You get someone who, like, looks at stats, and as you said, Peter, they look at catch, number of catches, and they go, Jesus, that guy's doing three times the production the other guy is. Obviously, he's better. And as you said, you really need to look behind that. I guess last question before we jump into, like, the offensive side of the ball, lads, that I'm really interested about is that, like, and I'm not looking for an example. If you have one, it'd be great. But has this ever happened that you've looked at these prospects and you've said, Jesus, this guy could be absolutely gangbusters if he got to the right team? They end up going to, like, off the top of my head, Matt Stafford. You know, he's with the Lions. He's seen as this generational talent. He's amazing, but also the Lions. So nothing happens. Then he goes over to LA, wins the Super Bowl. Have you seen anybody in college that you look at him and go, that guy's pure and utter raw talent. He needs a good coach to develop him. And he needs someone good throwing him the ball, or, you know, if he's on the defensive side of the ball or whatever. Does that happen? And you sort of go, I'm going to keep an eye on this guy, and it just never really pans over.
Yeah, it certainly happens. I mean, I can't specifically think of names off the top of my head, but yeah, I mean, it absolutely happens. And that's the other thing, you know, where players are drafted is so important because it does become horses for courses. You know, if you're getting, you know, a top-notch quarterback, you want him to be going to an organization where they know how to coach quarterbacks.
Yeah. Not the Bears, basically.
I didn't say that.
Well, yeah, well, I think it fits, doesn't it? I think Brock Purdy is a perfect example of that. Would Brock Purdy have been the sort of quarterback that he's become in another organization? Would he have been that in somewhere like the Giants? I'm not sure that he would, because he's in the right situation at the right time with the right surrounding cast. He's become a, you know, a real sort of starting caliber NFL quarterback. Mm. And I just think that's is one element of it. The other element I always consider is the fact that it's about getting the right characters in the right cities as well. I think you've got to consider that. There's certain fits for Green Bay, isn't there, in the kind of lifestyle that city provides. And I think that's really important as well. And I think you saw with Tucker Kraft, for example, last year, he's an absolutely prototype perfect Packer, isn't he, in terms of his outlook on life and the way he conducts himself. So I think that's fairly important as well.
Yeah. And look, I mean, the Packers don't always get it right. You know, like, I mean, how many times have you seen them draft a guy and then they trade him or they let him go and then he goes to a different team? You know, the Micah Hydes and Casey Haywards and all that, and they move on somewhere else and they become a dynamite player. Demarius Randle had a look like he was trending upwards, and then you're like, no, he's gone. So look, with that in mind then, lads, and maybe Andy, I'll kick this to you. But if we have, and this is what's great about Peter's draft guide, is that, you know, it's great articles at the beginning, great articles at the end, and then when you run through all the different positions, you know, picking out, Peter, the different players that kind of suit the Packers. But Andy, what the hell does Brian Gutekunst want? Do we know what Brian Gutekunst wants? So that there's two questions in this, really, right? Number one, what is Brian Gutekunst's needs this year? And then second off, irrespective of what the needs are, and I sort of talked about on a past podcast about the RAS score, but what does he look for in a player, Andy?
Do you want the real answer, or do you want...
I want it as raw and honest with minimal swearing.
He's in the conversation and he wants the best player available, and we're looking 24/7 to improve the roster. Amazing. Is that the answer you want?
It was. Do you know what? I was having a conversation with the wife earlier and he just came in through the door and started getting into that conversation as well. I was like, Brian, get out of the room, will you? But yeah, so the non-podium answer, do we know what he's looking for? Because they are all the tropes, you know what I mean? That anybody comes up, you know, your granny, he's going to be in the conversation. But what does he need this year, Andy? And what the hell type of player does he want? Is it true? Does he go for the tall, rangy guys? Does he want a tall, rangy guy at defensive back? But where's his mind at? Do we know?
Yeah, I think he knows what he wants. I think he wants premium positions because that's what the Packers always do. And that's what he always does. So I think he'll be looking at offensive line or he'll be looking at cornerback. And I think that with his kind of home run picks, that's where he goes. And he'll go for the guy with the massive RAS score. And he'll go for the guy with the biggest ceiling, if that makes any sense. So I think that he swings for the bleachers, doesn't he, when he's going on his first round pick. Yeah. And then after that, I think he's got a bit of a luxury. I think he can pick and choose where he needs to go. There's obvious holes in the roster at safety and running back depth and linebacker, obviously. But I think that certainly first pick, I'd be surprised if he looks anywhere outside defensive back, hybrid, cornerback, stroke, offensive line. So I think what he needs more than anything is his titles is what he needs to justify the kind of last 4 or 5 years and some of the decisions he's taken as an organisation. So I think he's got a franchise quarterback now, and he's got another window of opportunity. The decks are cleared, aren't they, in terms of salary cap? So this is going to say more about him as a GM now than it's sort of 2 years, I would say, than anything else. So it's massive. He had a great draft last year, and kudos for him for that. But he's got to build on that and stack success now, I think.
And Peter, to you then, I mean, you know, do we know? So Andy's saying safety linebacker, DB, maybe a running back. Can you couple that then, Peter, with sort of your thoughts on it? But also, when you look at the amount of picks that the Packers have, does that skew the draft strategy at all in your mind?
I don't think it skews the strategy. I think I think that certainly when you get to the middle rounds and beyond, I think it gives you opportunities to throw a few more darts. So if you had a position where you know that, you know, you may have a number of holes, then you might, you know, if we remember, I think it was back in, may have been Guti's first draft or his second draft when he picked all those wide receivers in that draft. Equanimous St. Brown, MVS, and the first one of the three who said, I can't remember his name, but he picked three wide receivers, and, you know, and he was throwing darts and saying, look, I'm not necessarily expecting all three of those guys to work, but if two of the three work, then it's job done. Mm. And I think we may see a bit of that in the later rounds, and that may come at offensive line. It may come in the defensive backfield. It may even come at linebacker as well. But, you know, I think with 11 picks, it gives you the opportunity to do those kinds of things. It also gives the opportunity, for example, to throw a dart at a quarterback later in the draft.
Yeah.
So, you know, not a position of need. But, you know, if you go back to Ron Wolf's days when he drafted the likes of Mark Brunell and a little bit later Aaron Brooks, you know, those guys developed into good NFL quarterbacks on other teams, and the Packers got draft picks back for those guys. So even if they, you know, they become a backup for your team for a couple of years, you can then cash them in, as it were, for draft picks. So I think quarterback, when you've got 11 picks, is certainly worth a shot later in the draft.
Yeah, because look, lads, we're talking about offense in this one, I think, particularly, you know, quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, tight ends. We're going to follow your draft order, Pete, your draft guide order, interior offensive linemen and offensive tackles. Out of all of those, Andy, in this draft, do you see the Packers going high on any of those offensive positions, say first or second round?
I think he needs to find solutions. I think that's for sure. I think he needs... I think he needs to find solutions at his safety spot. I think he needs to find a solution at the off-ball linebacker. So I think they'll go relatively high for those two positions. Offensively speaking, he needs depth at running back. I think he needs offensive line help, certainly. A lot of talk about wide receiver, but actually for the first time in many years, that room feels kind of stacked, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So whilst I still gravitate towards the wide receivers when I'm doing my reviews, yeah, I'd still like to see us take one. I don't know why, just because I like wide receivers. But I don't see us going tight end. The two players that I would look at are not going to be, it would be a luxury pick for us. So I think it's, I would concur with Peter. I think they'll go quarterback later on, sixth, maybe seventh. And he may even go an undrafted free agent just to throw into the room as well. But that's how I see it. I think it's one of the easier ones to predict this year, to be honest. The last few years, we've had a number of holes. It's been quite a guessing game. You know, people doing millions and millions of kind of simulation drafts, and I kind of end up with the same players every single time. Yeah. So I think this is more predictable. Maybe it's putting ourselves out there saying that, but I do think it is. I really do.
Goody's gonna swing for the fences now when it comes to it. Like.
And just to pick up on that, I mean, my guess, Steve, is if they go offense in the first round, you know, and clearly it's just going to depend on how the board falls. But if it were offense in the first round, I'd be surprised if it wasn't an offensive lineman.
Yeah.
At that pick at 25, you know, offensive tackle is deep in this draft, and interior offensive lineman is deep in this draft as well. And to be honest, you know, unless you're picking a Quentin Nelson, you know, in the top 10, you know, the interior offensive linemen typically don't start coming off the board until the 20s anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, the first or second guy on the list is likely to be available there where the Packers pick at 25. And there's a whole bunch of offensive tackles, you know, beyond the first three, four, maybe, that won't be there when the Packers pick. There's still a whole bunch of others that are value towards the end of the first round. So I would be really surprised if it's offense that it's not offensive line early.
Yeah, I agree. Mm. I agree. And I think the other thing as well, the offensive linemen that are slated to go really high are probably either A, out of our reach, or don't fit our typical prototypical size weight combo. So that's just my view.
So there's no new houses, is what you're saying, Andy, up high to select. Yeah, look, it's a good segue. I mean, and the draft guide's brilliant because it goes into sort of, you know, how many of the positions are expected to go and how high they are. And, you know, looking at the running back position, which is one that people are keying in on, with Aaron Jones going, now I know we've got, you know, superstar help coming in there, but they were sort of saying, look, they want a relatively young or rookie or whatever to come in and learn, and the experience behind Josh Jacobs, right? So we nearly, obviously we're going to take a running back at some stage, but Peter, in your guide, you do say that when it comes to running back, you know, the high rounds, it's not the same sort of appetite that there was in prior years. But before we get ahead of ourselves, I'd love to pick your brain, Peter, on sort of position number one, which is quarterback. So you've said that you wouldn't be surprised if the Packers picked someone, you know, later on in the draft. But there's something about it that I think is kind of delicious, in the sense that if Aaron Rodgers was still there, they pick a quarterback whenever there's going to be, oh, what's going on? Whereas I think that with Jordan Love, they've seen brilliant stuff from him. But it wouldn't be all that controversial if they just picked him, because now we're in that normal rhythm, right? Of if you draft a quarterback, great. And if you move him on, brilliant, you know, but it's not so controversial. When it comes to quarterback then for the Packers, or just in general, really, I think to start, Pete, what is the quarterback class like? Because we know the marquee name is Caleb Williams. So number one, is he definitely first? I would imagine so. And then what's the quarterback quality like? And then who do you like for the Packers as well, Pete? There's a threefer question for you.
Yeah. So it's an interesting quarterback class in that it's strong at the top. So certainly you've got, I wouldn't be surprised if quarterbacks go 1, 2, and 3. So that's Caleb Williams, that's Drake May, that's Jaden Daniels. And it wouldn't surprise me if Jaden Daniels went before Drake May. You know, that those orders are probably interchangeable. And it wouldn't surprise me if somebody got up to pick four and potentially took JJ McCarthy there. So quarterbacks could go in the top four picks here, which clearly helps teams picking further down because, you know, other position players are still on the board. And then you've got the next two are kind of wild cards that could sneak into the first round. Bo Nix and Michael Penix. I like Michael Penix a lot, right? But he's been injured a lot, right? So that's the kind of unknown question there. Once you get beyond those six, then there's quite a drop off.
Yeah.
And you're into the middle rounds of, I guess, Michael Pratt of Tulane, Spencer Rattler, who's a bit of a wild card out there. So you go back a couple of years, Spencer Rattler with his talent was talked about being the overall number one pick in the draft. His college career just kind of hasn't panned out that way.
Yeah.
And then you get further down, you know, further down the draft, rounds 5, 6, 7. And one of the names that keeps cropping up because his arm is huge, probably the strongest arm in this draft, is Joe Milton III.
Yeah.
And he has an absolute cannon for an arm, right? You know, really strong arm. And, you know, he, I think, is potentially in play for the Packers in the late rounds.
And you like Michael Pratt, don't you, Pete? Why do you like Michael Pratt for the Packers? Is it the round he's going in? Is it the measurables? What sort of made you pick him out in the draft guide to say he could be one of them?
Yeah, I mean, I like Michael Pratt because he's accurate and because he can move. Right, and I think in today's NFL, what you can't have is a static drop back passer. Right, so I found Michael Pratt to be accurate. Good arm, not as strong as some of the guys at the top of the draft or Joe Milton. But I think in round kind of 4-ish in the middle of that draft, if that were the way that a team wanted to go, if the Packers wanted to get a guy in the middle of the draft, you know, I think Michael Pratt's a solid player. I think Spencer Rattler's a really interesting wild card because his talent coming out of high school, now we're going back 4 years, was tremendous. Arm, release, et cetera, et cetera. Like I say, his career's gone probably not as well as it could have done. It probably hasn't played as well as, you know, people expected in college.
Just interested then, Peter. Did you, were you a follower of him on his Friday Night Lights show?
I saw bits of it.
Yeah. So I'm not surprised that he's not filled the talent that he has, if I'm honest. So just, I know it's edited and it's done for TV and all that kind of stuff, so you take it with a pinch of salt. But what I saw was not the profile of somebody who's going to be an elite NFL QB. So just for me, I've found it really interesting following his career through college, obviously following on from the high school stuff, because I was an avid watcher of Friday Night Lights. I loved it. It was fantastic. And yeah, he was an interesting character, shall we say. So yeah, not surprised that he's not quite at the top tier.
Mm. And who else, Andy, tickled your fancy? Because look, this is the thing. We always see it. We always hear this, right? Someone goes in to look at a tape of a quarterback and then they spot the wide receiver, right? Because quarterbacks is what it's all about. Who's excited you in this quarterback class? And let's talk guilty pleasures. Who would you like the Packers to have sit there? Or are you sort of totally off on that because of Jordan Love? And then who do you think is potentially likely then in the later rounds for the Packers at QB?
I'm not. It's like cheating on your girlfriend or your wife looking at all these other QBs, isn't it? Why would you do that when you've got steak at home?
Andy,
you're not going to go and look
us
at all the...
We won't tell anybody, Andy. Go on, tell us. It's just between us.
It's not happening, is it? We've got fillet steak at home. We don't need to go looking at the fried burgers, do we? So, the top QB speak for themselves. I think maybe Bo Nix will go in the first round as well. I really do. I think you might get five QBs going in round one. And then after that, Michael Pratt, the guy Peter alluded to there, is an option. But he's going to be maybe the fourth round pick, Peter, to get him.
About there, yeah.
Yeah, so I think my personal opinion is the names you have on your guy between 10 and 15 will get one of those, is my honest opinion. And maybe Hartman's the least likely of those five names. So Bradley would be my favourite. He's sort of the bottom of that from South Alabama. And then the guy from BYU, Slovis, Devin Leary is a bit of a wild card. And then Austin Reed. So those five names between sort of 10 and 15 would be the sweet spot for me. Seventh round, maybe it's even undrafted, one or two of those as well. Hmm. And maybe, like I said, we may draft one and pick one up as an undrafted free agent. So it's a good opportunity, isn't it, for somebody, although we've, we're settled at number one. And there's nothing to say that two and three wouldn't be open for competition, is there? So, yeah, interesting.
And look, running back, and we're going to get to that. And I think that's one of the most intriguing things for me, actually, is just to go from Aaron Jones and to take that leap, I guess, to let him go out the door. But I'm going to skip that for a second. And I want to talk about wide receivers, Andy, because that's something that gets you jazzed up, is the wide receivers here. Now, you said already, look, we're stacked, right? And we've got a load of players in there. I think there's some positions, like you said, tight end, which are probably off the table because of the talent we have. And we're happy there. But let's talk wide receivers then. Who has grabbed your attention at wide receiver? And do you think that Goody keep... Because look, he does it, doesn't he? He goes off and then he'll get just batches of talented kids in later rounds. Who are you excited about and who do you think could be a Packer?
Well, the excitement sits at the top of the board, doesn't it? With Neighbours and Harrison, they're the standout too. And you could probably throw Odunze in there, but I think he's the third of three on that one. The guy from LSU, Brian Thomas, I think he's a beast. He's an athlete, but yeah, we're not going to be entertaining any of those guys, are we? So it's look but can't touch, I'm afraid. For us, I think you're going to be looking probably round three at very best. So that's the guys I've sort of concentrated my efforts on, really. I like the guy from Alabama, Jermaine Burton. I think he's a real option for us. I also like Ricky Pearsall, but I think he might have to stretch to round two to get him. And then one of the guys Peter highlighted, actually, Javon Baker from UCF. So three names for me that I would really be interested in.
Yeah, you kind of said that, Pete, as well, in yours. The first player that you have as a potential Packer is Ricky Pearsall between round two and three. Do you think the Packers make a bit of a splash in this if he is available?
Look, it wouldn't surprise me for them to pick up another wide receiver. And not because it's necessarily a position of need. Mm. You know, and we've talked a number of times about what's great about this group of wide receivers is they're growing up together with the quarterback. But also you have to remember, I think it's also good to keep retooling positions. And also you have to think a couple of years ahead when you run into the danger, don't you, of everybody hitting free agency at about the same time. if you're not careful. So it doesn't do any harm to keep retooling a position. And I think that, you know, Ricky Pearsall, as Andy said, really good hands, really good speed, 4.41, 40 speed, absolutely, you know, end of round two, early round three type guy. Just depends on how the board falls. Absolutely, absolutely love him. You know, and the other name that Andy mentioned, or one of the other names that Andy mentioned, Jevon Baker out of Central Florida. Slightly different receiver, good route runner, good blocker. Now that kind of fits what the Packers have always wanted, or at least in recent years, out of their wide receivers. You know, he's 6'1", 6'1 and a half. So he's quite a big receiver. He's not a 6'4 like Marvin Harrison, but he's, you know, a good size receiver. So it wouldn't surprise me to see the Packers go that route with, you know, with Pearsall or Jevon Baker. Baker may be there in round four, possibly three stroke four. So, you know, with the Packers having those five picks in the first three rounds, it certainly wouldn't surprise me if one of those day two picks was a wide receiver, even though it wouldn't apparently be, you know, a position of the greatest need.
Yeah, and Peter, look, let's take two kind of wide receivers ish, right? And we're going to get on to running backs now, because you were one of the first to point out, and it kind of harks back to the conversation we had at the beginning of the podcast. These players who were seen as, right, you're a slot receiver. And they said about AJ Dillon when he came out, oh, no, he can't catch the ball. But he could. He just wasn't asked to, right? So we're looking at the running backs. This is one that really concerns me because, yes, we get, you know, Jacobs in and he's expected to, his numbers are higher than Aaron Jones. But, like, for me, it starts and ends really with the Packers offense when it comes to the running back. You need a running back who is an expert at the playbook, knows exactly where when to leak out, when to be that pressure valve. They also need to be a good receiver as well. And the fact that, you know, not AJ Dillon was in there as a safety now, right, by any means, because he was largely underwhelming. Jacobs goes down. What do we do? I mean, you know, you look at the running backs in this class and you kind of say, you know, look, there's loads that went last year. It might not be the year for it this time round. Like, where do we sit with this class of running backs? And how high do you think we go? Or do you think that Goody won't put the premium on the running back position because they're all rookies?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, they went running back with AJ Dillon in round two, which was earlier than we had expected them to pick running back in that draft.
Yeah.
So he certainly has a history for going for running back slightly earlier than we might expect. And you're right to ask that question. I mean, you know, they like Emmanuel Wilson, but you know, most of what we saw of him was in preseason before he got hurt. It's not going to surprise anybody, I think, if the Packers go down the running back route. Now, this group of running backs, you know, there isn't a Bijan Robinson in this group. There isn't a Jahmyr Gibbs in this group. You know, this is a group where there's probably about, you know, 8, 9, 10 guys that could go from round two to round four. And it's also not necessarily clear as to what order those guys are going to go in either, because there's a real mix of running backs in that group. I think the one that kind of jumps off the board as a possible Packer type, when you think of an Aaron Jones type back, is the back out of Tennessee, Jalen Wright. Slightly taller than Aaron Jones, but not a lot taller, similar size. Good speed, in fact, very good speed. Improving and being utilized more as a receiver, you know, in this past year than he was previously. And has speed to the outside. You know, and with the Packers running that outside zone offense, he's a great fit for the Packers. You know, we see other names kind of crop up, and I think one name that people jump to a lot because he was, you know, played for the Badgers is Braylon Allen. Completely different type of back. You know, if you want a pro comparison for the type of back that Braylon Allen is, AJ Dillon is that pro comparison.
Oh no.
Yeah. Braylon Allen is that big inside running back. So you've got two totally different backs there. And for me, Jalen Wright is a better fit for what I think we would be looking for for the Packers. But there's a few guys in there that are really good, versatile receivers coming out of the backfield. Ray Davis out of Kentucky, Will Shipley out of Clemson. Those guys in kind of the middle rounds certainly have a chance because they're versatile and they'll catch the ball coming out of the backfield.
Now, Andy Davies is like a savant when it comes to picking, Rain Man when it comes to picking running backs. What was that year, Andy, that you picked like the lads in the 6 and 7, or maybe even undrafted free agents, right? So when I look at the running back, the top running backs list on Peter's draft guide here, like he was just saying, I mean, they go from rounds 2 to 3 all the way down. But like, does, you know, once you get to sort of the bottom third of the first page, they're round 7 on undrafted free agents. And then the second page of running backs are just all undrafted free agents. So it seems like it's a bit of a minefield for most, but not for Andy Davies, because Andy Davies is able to pick out who the running backs are. Tell us, Andy, who are you excited about? And tell us exactly, and I don't want any errors, who the Packers are going to select later on in the rounds. No pressure. No pressure.
That's fine. I'm cool with that. Yeah. Whatever he does that's not this is wrong. So we're comfortable with our selection process, aren't we? I think if he was to make a significant investment, but I don't think he will because he's got other needs, it would be Trey Benson. I think he's the best all-round back in this draft for me, in terms of the best fit. But I don't think we'll be picking in the sort of the upper echelons of round 2 to go and get him.
And what is it about him, Andy? What do you like about him?
I think what we need is an influx of speed. I think that's what's been missing from the backfield when Aaron Jones hasn't been 100%. And even in that sort of breakaway speed, you know, the sort of the overarching memories of Aaron Jones are all great, aren't they? But my short-term memories of getting caught in the open field twice in playoff games that could have changed the game. And then that, for me, we just lacked that breakaway threat. So I think a fully tuned up Benson gives you that, as does Jalen Wright. But you can get Jalen Wright probably a round and a half further down the draft than what you can get Benson. So for that reason, I think he's perfect. I think he's the perfect fit. I think he's got a great combination of potential. I think he's got good hands. I think he's got potential to be a good blocker. He, you know, the outside zone suits his game perfectly. And yeah, he ticks all the boxes for me. So I was disappointed to see that Pete would pull him into the round 3. I thought you could maybe sneak him into round 4 and get him in the side door, but I think that's not going to happen, is it? Unfortunately, it's not going to happen. So Jalen Wright would be the number 1. Now, I also think, though, I think we should, maybe the double dip category would apply to running back. And the other guy I really like down the bottom, Pete already mentioned some names of guys like Shipley, but Isaac Guerrero from Louisville. I think he's I think he's an unfurnished raw, but I think he's got loads of potential. And I think he could be a name to watch out for. And the other one, more of a wild card again, probably at the bottom of round 7, is a guy from South Dakota State, Isaiah Davis. Not because he's called Davis without an E, but because I think he's a good player. So three names there. But Jalen Wright would be top of the list in terms of reality and what we can probably get up to. And then them two guys down the bottom there, maybe it's to add some depth and competition to the arena.
And I'm seeing some familiar names in here. Tagovailoa is one of them, right? Now, not in the running back category, obviously. But one here that stands out, obviously, is Frank Gore Jr. And I just think that if you want a player that's going to play for the next 34 years, like his father, I mean, pick Frank Gore Jr. Can someone?
There's a lot, isn't there, this year, though? There's a lot this year, isn't there? Peter would probably expand upon it a bit more in terms of McConkey and Frank Gore Jr. and Harrison. And there's a lot, isn't there? There's a lot more than I could ever remember in any other draft.
Are we getting old, Peter? Is that what it is? Are we just getting so old?
Yeah, Brendan Rice, wide receiver, Jerry Rice's son. Yeah, there's quite a few. I mean, the worry about Frank Gore Jr. playing for the next 34 years is I don't want to get to the point, Steve, where we're talking about draft picks whose career I won't see out.
So, Jesus Christ. Yeah, it's took a sinister tone now, so it has to be something to tell us, Peter. But no, look, I just don't want to be doing this podcast still when Frank Jr. is coming out and his dad and granddad are probably still bloody playing. The guy was just unbelievably durable. I think we could probably brush over tight ends. Am I wrong in saying that, Andy, that we can brush over tight ends? I mean, we have the guys we need, don't we? We have the guys we need. Do we need to talk about them?
I think we do. You know, allowing for injuries and all being well and all that kind of stuff. But you saw last season that both guys took a bit of a knock, didn't they? They missed game time, and I think we have a duo for the future. But I still think we are looking for that H-back type role, that guy that can do, you know, that can pound you and block you and do everything that De Guerra should have done, but didn't.
So, poor De Guerra. Oh my God! But come on, you flirted with us, Andy. You've given us a bit of foreplay, a bit of tight end foreplay, Andy. So tell us, what round are we talking about with tight end? What makes sense for the pack?
I don't think we'll pull the trigger. I think there was two guys that you would look at, but they would be luxury picks for me. So whether it was Theo Johnson or the other guy from what's he called, Pete? Benson from Kansas State. Those would be the two guys for me that would be the sort of the outstanding candidates for tight end. And I don't know what round 3 or 4 probably tops for them. It's a bit of a luxury. I think we'll still have needs at that point in the draft. So I would like it. I did toy with it a couple of times when I've done simulations, and certainly Sinnott. I think he's a sort of perfect fit. But again, it's probably a luxury pick.
Yeah, look, Peter, you mentioned that earlier, right, that we lost a run of ourselves when we went for AJ Dillon, the same draft that we went for De Guerra. So, I mean, it just makes sense that this gets absolutely out of hand and we get a running back in round 2 and then we go for a tight end in round 3. But how do you actually see this going, Pete? Because like Andy says, you know, you're talking more of that H-back role, and really helpfully in your draft guide, you've picked out the likes of Ben Sim and Jaheim Bell and Devin Culp and Jack Westover, all as H-backs. Do we go tight end? Is there someone worth going for tight end? And can you give us kind of a flavour of what the tight ends are actually like coming out this year?
Yeah, sure. So not the strongest tight end group. A year ago we were heading into the draft, weren't we, being quite worried about the Packers tight end position. And as it turned out, you know, Luke Musgrave was the first guy that Andy raised with me last year, months before the draft. That was a great pickup. And then with Tucker Kraft as well, you know, the potential for that tight end group is really good. And then you're looking for that third guy. And yeah, they like having that H-back type, the De Guerra type. So I think that Ben Sinnott and I think Jaheim Bell kind of a round later than that. So we're talking rounds 3, 4, 5, that kind of area. I think those guys are in play for the Packers. I think as the overall group, you know, there's one guy that will go in the first round, and that's Brock Bowers. Now, he's slightly undersized for what you would look for in a normal tight end. He's 6'3 towards 6'4, 240, 245. But this is a guy that would have been the number one tight end had he been eligible for last year's draft, right? Yeah. He's that good, right? And it's because that they've played at the University of Georgia, they've used him in all kinds of different ways. What's interesting about Bowers to me with regard to the Packers is that there are certainly scenarios where he drops down the board to about pick 20, right? Because when you look at, you know, we talked about 4 quarterbacks potentially going early. Certainly 3 wide receivers will, probably Brian Thomas does as well. So that's 4 quarterbacks that have gone early. 4, 5, 6, 7 offensive linemen are going. You throw in 2 or 3 corners, and before you know it, potentially Brock Bowers is sitting there at 20 or 21 or 22.
Yeah.
What if he's sitting there at 25 when the Packers pick? Now, that would be a complete luxury for the Packers. You know, it'd be difficult to say that's the position of need that you're looking for, but he's a super talented player, possibly as good a tight end as college football, as I don't like hyperbole, as ever seen at the college level. That's how good he was. Now, again, doesn't meet all of those measurables, but he's a super talented player. And look, you look at that the other way. If he's sitting there when the Packers pick, you might well be sitting there on the back end of getting lots of phone calls from teams that want him.
Yeah.
Which puts you in a nice trade position. But yeah, as an overall group, I guess I should mention the second guy on my tight end list, Jatavion Sanders of Texas. And I want to mention him because he reminds me a lot of Jermichael Finley, who also went to Texas. He's that type of tight end. But winding all the way back, totally agree with Andy. I don't think the top tight ends are in play really here for the Packers unless something bizarre happens with Bowers dropping down the board. It's that H-back spot around round four-ish that is potentially in play for Green Bay, I think.
Yeah, and look, it's good to get a Jermichael Finley mentioned because, you know, I think his legacy is kind of being tarnished a bit by all of the Greg Jennings-style stuff that went on behind the scenes. But my God, that guy was a hell of a player. Absolutely fantastic player. Just so dynamic and dynamite to watch. But look, that leaves us with interior offensive linemen and offensive tackles. Now, Andy, this is one that you sort of pointed out at the beginning. Like, look, you know, this is definitely the Packers are going to have to make a splash here. So I'm going to give the expert's choice here. So out of interior offensive linemen or offensive tackles, which one do you want to pick and which one do you want to wax lyrical about? You know, where the talent is in it and then who's likely going to be a Packer or should be a Packer if you had your way.
Interior offensive lineman, going to wax lyrical, it would be the number one guy, Troy Fantanau, just because it sounds like Fashanu to a degree. I don't know. I think he's just got everything. He's got footwork, he's got balance, he's got a high ceiling, he's got everything you look for in an offensive lineman. He's got that gritty, kind of aggressive style as well. I just think he's a complete package. Who do I think will have eyes on? I think the popular consensus is Barton, isn't it? The guy from Duke, because he's played in that multiple positions and has potential to play in multiple positions, which is what the Packers look for. So in terms of the high pick, it'd be those two guys. Certainly, I think you'd be in the top end of round one for the former. And for Barton, you're looking at probably where we are at 25 for that guy.
Yeah. Value for money, Pete Barton at that.
Without question for me, for the reasons that Andy's just described. You know, started the last 2 years at left tackle, played center before that. I think he's an interior guy in the NFL. You know, you look, his arm length isn't quite what you would look for necessarily in a tackle, but has all of that versatility. The other name Andy mentioned, Fautanu, he's a really good player, right? So this is a guy that I think could play guard or tackle.
Yeah.
And he was one of those guys that when you do the draft preview, do I put him with the guards? Do I put him with the tackles? I ended up leaving him with the guards, but he may well, you know, certainly get a chance at tackle in the NFL. Slightly shorter than you would hope for in a tackle. He's 6'4", and you kind of look at 6'5" and above typically. But you know, is he going to drop to 25? I would doubt it. But it just depends on, you know, again, how the board falls. I've got Brian Thomas, the wide receiver that we've mentioned a couple of times, below him on my board. Well, he could go above him. You know, the edge guy, Latu out of UCLA, could go above him. And all of a sudden, he's dropping towards pick 20.
Yeah.
You know, and I've got Cooper DeJean at 23. He could go earlier. Cooper DeJean could go earlier than that. And, you know, so guys could fall to the Packers. But I think right smack where the Packers are, Graham Barton feels like the pick. I guess the other interior guy you would want to throw in there, just because he's right there in that area, is Jackson Powers Johnson out of Oregon. Mainly a center, played one really great year at center this past year. So if they were going for an out and out center, Jackson Powers Johnson could be the pick there. But I think, you know, to repeat myself, they like that versatility, so Graham Barton could well be that pick.
There's a couple of points on that. Sorry, Steve, just on the Graham Barton pick. I've heard a lot of good things about his character in terms of his work ethic, his approach and all that. But there's two things. Historically, Green Bay don't draft interior linemen round one, do they? I think Aaron Taylor and probably, what, Ron Hallstrom going back to the 80s are the last two, if I'm not mistaken.
Probably,
So it's not historically something they do, or they don't really view it as a premium position, do they? I would be... Does that pick excite you? Because it doesn't me. It might be solid and it might kind of fit the roster and all that side of it. I'm not wildly excited by that pick. And the other option for me is in terms of Fanta now, because he can play both positions and he just about hits that height threshold, I think there's a strong possibility if he's there at 19 or 20, he's one of the two players we could trade up for. And I really do. I think there's a real possibility we'd look at that.
Would it be worth trading up, do you think, Fantasy? I mean, you know, they say they don't value it as a position, but if they did that, Andy, would you be like, yeah, look, solid? I mean, if you have the chance to do it. You say he's one of two, so I'm also interested now who that second player is.
Because I think that he's got that two-position value. I think Peter's right. I think we don't play as much. We're okay with the slightly shorter tackles. When you look around the NFL, the 6'7s, the 6'8s, the 6'9s in some instances now, we're quite happy with 6'4, 6'5. I think that's kind of our model, isn't it? So I think he could do a variety of things for us. And I think Peter's right. He's a bloody good player, is what he is. It's hard to find many critiques when you're watching his game. So, and really good players, really solid players that can play multiple positions a gold dust with a really high ceiling. I think he can only get better as well. So, yeah, offensively, that's kind of where we're at. And then just sort of tinge with that as well is the fact that further down the board, I think there's plug and play players there as well. So in terms of trying to get players that you could get the same kind of value out of, it's a bit rough on Barton. I think there's options further down as well, in my opinion. That's just where I'm at.
Yeah,
and that's a really good point. So this, both the interior offensive line and the offensive tackles that we're going to get to in a minute, this is a really deep draft for those guys. So, you know, you can absolutely see quite a lot going in the first round, or you could see some of them slip into round two as well. But beyond just that initial group, there's lots of good players in that group up until about round three-ish. So, yeah, I mean, you know, there's a case for, and there's always this case, isn't there, for picking a guy at a position where there's not a lot of depth because you know you can't get that guy later on. Whereas when you're picking a position of depth, well, you know, the seventh offensive tackle, how big is the drop-off between him and the third offensive tackle? Probably not that huge. So I can wait to get the seventh guy rather than jump for the third guy.
Yeah, 100%. And that's the kind of point I'm kind of making, really, is that, yeah. I don't know, linebacker, for example, I think there's two that I would really want, maybe it's four that I would consider, but after that the drop off is massive. Whereas with the interior offensive lineman, for example, there's probably at least three or four names that I would be really sort of interested to see if we would entertain. So yeah, that's you hit the nail on the head there, Peter.
Because offensive tackle now, if you look at it, Peter, the list is, I mean, there's a load looking on your list as to go in the first round or between the first, second round, all the way down, and there's some good picks there into the sixth and seventh round as well. I mean, we have to go, what, as far as nearly 23 to 25 with the seventh round. So offensive tackles, look, Bakhtiari was injured for forever, and we've obviously moved on, and I know it's devastating and people are pointing to playoff losses and that he wasn't there for the reason for it, but it kind of looked like it's not such a shock for us, I guess, at left tackle. What are the Packers looking for at tackle, do you think? I mean, have we found, obviously not, because we hear all these rumors coming out. Who was it? Rob Domofsky released a story during the week talking about, you know, this player is an all pro here, but he's a Hall of Famer at this sort of thing or whatever. Offensive tackles, is it deep this year, and do the Packers make a splash?
Yeah, I think yes and yes. And I think one of the things that doubly helps every year with offensive tackle is that you can draft the guy at tackle, and if he doesn't work out at tackle, you can very often move him inside to guard.
Yeah.
Yeah. May not be quite as good or maybe backups, but you know, there's a great history of tackles. John Runyon was a great example of a tackle moving inside to guard. So you kind of get a double shot with most offensive tackles. And yeah, it is strong at the top. I think I might be wrong in this. I think five offensive tackles is the most that have ever gone in round one. It might be six. It's five or six. I would expect at least as many of those to go in round one this year, if not more than that. So it is strong at the top. But of course, if a whole bunch of that position go, that means other positions aren't going. So, you know, when we get onto the defense, we can talk about that. But, and again, you've got this whole mixture of, you know, you've got guys that have been stars in college, like Joel, right at the top of this group, down to like the fifth guy on our board, Amarius Mims, who has all the talent in the world, big guy, you know, 6'8", 300 and a lot, can really move, has started 8 games in college.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Right, so, you know, you've got this kind of whole mixture of guys. You've got J.C. Latham of Alabama, played predominantly right tackle, right, but has been a starter for multiple years in college. But also, and you try not to helmet scout, but some of the Alabama offensive linemen haven't worked out so well in recent years. So is that in your head?
Yeah.
Whole lot of things to think about.
Yeah, because, I mean, the first thing I'm looking at here, Pete, when I'm going down through it, is the position list. And when you have offensive tackle, offensive guard, I know you said, look, effectively all offensive tackles, you just move them in. But when I look at the players that have done multiple positions in college, you just know the Packers are going, bingo, you know, and they're just looking for them. But Andy, I'm interested to see how you feel about the offensive tackles in this. And it's probably a good juncture, Andy, as well, to ask you this question. And maybe it's a bit too late, right? But when we look at this draft, and we always sort of get this breakdown, do you think for the Packers that this will be offensive heavy more so than defense, or defensive heavy, which sort of affects who we pick, right? Because like what Peter has alluded to, if they select a load of offensive tackles, well, then that leaves defense open first and we go there. So maybe if you want to tell us that first, Andy, sort of what is this for the Packers? Is this an offensive draft this year? Is it a defensive draft? And then maybe crack into some of these offensive tackles who get you all roiled up.
I think in terms of quality and your premium picks, it'll be defensive focus, absolutely. And then maybe in terms of throwing the darts at the board, as you alluded to earlier, then it'll be the offensive side of the ball. That's my take on it. So I think it's there's a glut of big-bodied. I mean, they're huge, aren't they, Peter, in terms of size? They're just a big group of guys, aren't they? You know, saw them at sort of Indianapolis, and they fill the lens, don't they? They're some huge guys.
To zoom out our eyes, yeah.
Yeah, they're big guys, aren't they? I don't know. Biggest offensive tackle that's ever played for the Packers, no more than what, 6? The current tackle, I suppose, is the biggest guy that we've had, I would guess. So, yeah, it's an odd one. It's an odd one. I think that, you know, Peter's worked sort of from the top down. I kind of start at the bottom and work up. Because just for that, you know, I'm looking at guys like number 26 in Peter's board, you know, Tylan Grable from UCF, you know, someone who's going to be a 7th rounder or an undrafted free agent. Mm. I like Garrett Greenfield from South Dakota. I think he's somebody who could be, could sit on the practice squad or sit at the bottom of the roster for a year and be sort of mentored and brought through. There's been a lot of talk about Javon Foster from Missouri.
Yeah.
He could probably get in the 5th round. So guys like that working all the way down, and then the highest one I could see going to Green Bay would be probably Jordan Morgan at the sort of end of round one, beginning of round two, but I just don't see us entertaining any of the big guys. The one I really like, which I sort of joked about there, with Fashanu, I think he's going to be an awesome all-pro prospect for many years to come, so he's my favourite tackle of the bunch, to be fair.
Yeah, so I guess, Pete, look, I'll kick it over to you then and sort of say, you know, Andy says premium picks, defense. Are we thinking the same? And it'd take a really special or a really weird draft board in round one to go offense? Or do you see the value in the offensive lineman in this year's draft? Are you muted, Pete? You're giving some great feedback. We can't hear you.
I was muted.
You just kept the meaning of life there. And what,
that was the best answer I've ever given. I think that in an ideal world, they would probably go defense in round one, right? Because I think they have a position of need, which is safety, and they have one of their premium positions at corner. And I think you can never have enough of those guys. So I think that in an ideal world, that's where they would probably go. But I don't believe they're going to reach for a guy at those positions that, you know, that they could possibly get further down the draft. So I think it's probably defense first, but I wouldn't rule out an offensive lineman in round one, whether that's a Graham Barton, whether that's one of these tackles. Now, I think the question with the tackles is we just don't know how many are going to go before the Packers pick.
Yeah.
And that's my, you know, and that's my problem with this. You know, Jordan Morgan is certainly a possibility. That's the name that that Andy just mentioned. He's right in that end of first round, beginning of round two area. But again, you know, if there's a whole bunch of tackles still on the board when the Packers go to pick at 25, you're probably not going to take one because you're probably going to count on one of them being there when they pick with their early pick in round two.
Yeah.
So, you know, you throw that stuff into the mix. I like Amarius Mims out of Georgia. I like him a lot. But it's a heck of a projection for a guy that's only played, you know, started eight games in college. So I really don't know. I'm kind of sitting on the fence. And again, you know, there's a bunch of guys in the round two, round three area offensive tackle that you could easily take. I just get this feeling. We've talked about this two or three times. I just get this feeling that they like these versatile guys, and that they're going to dive in on a guy that's played a couple of positions in college and can play a couple of positions in the pros. And then I think they're going to work it out afterwards.
Yeah.
In terms of whether Zach Tom stays at tackle, whether he moves inside, et cetera, et cetera.
They do that every year, don't they? They throw the best offensive linemen together and figure out their best positions through the course of training camp and preseason and all that kind of stuff, don't they? So they do the same thing every single year and rely on good coaching, don't they? So
yeah,
I don't see it being any different this year. I think the other thing to consider is if you were going to pin your colours to the mast right now in terms of percentage terms, we're assuming that Green Bay picks at 25, but the trade up or trade back scenarios are definitely in play this year, aren't they? So I would be each of three, 33.3%, because I think it's really in the balance, depending on how the board falls. I really do.
Well, that, you know what, Andy, that's how we're going to end the podcast, because that was my last question for you, is that we're sort of talking about, and it's really intriguing to see, Jesus, you know, if this defensive player is there, or if that offensive player, and he does drop there, we're going to go for it. I'm going to get your predictions now, and I usually wait till the podcast just before the draft. But what are the odds for you, Andy, and then Peter, I'll come to you, that we do stay at 25? Like, what's your feeling? Do we move up if there's someone there, or are we more likely to move down and nab some more sort of goody special picks?
I think we'll get a better feel for it closer to the time. But if you're asking me right now, I think it's equal. I think just depending on where the board falls, I think there's one or two players that I would be reaching up for, and it would be as high as maybe as 15, where Indianapolis sit right now, for a prime defensive back, I think, would be the one, potentially an offensive tackle if one of those prime prospects are sat there. But I think it's more than likely it'll be a cornerback. So that's a trade-up scenario. And I think you probably give up a third round pick, Peter, is that right, to get to 15? Is that about right?
About
where we are, or two threes or a second even, to get a little bit higher. So there's that. Staying put, the board just doesn't fall right. I think we'd need the board to fall really as we want it. So that high number of QBs and all the things Petey discussed earlier, for us to sort of have the option of the players we really want at 25. Because the sweet spot of the draft for me is anywhere between sort of 30 and pick 65. And I can think we can solve a lot of our problems in that sort of 35 pick range. So I'd be quite happy trading back and picking up another couple of second rounders, third rounders, and really hitting all our sweet spots there, to be honest. So that would be my preferred option. But I would be quite happy seeing us going for the home run and trading up as well. I just don't like the options at 25 because that's the bit around not getting excited around Barton. That's okay, solid, yeah, but not quite sure it fits our remit, to be honest.
Mr. Jones?
Yeah, I think unless there's a specific player, so I think once you get, and this is the same, I think, for just about every draft, right? Once you get, let's say, beyond pick 20, you kind of get this pyramid thing of, you know, one or two players being right at the top, and then pyramid in the, when you get to about pick 20, the choices are so wide in terms of players' value who is so close together, if that makes sense. That the value for pick, you know, 20 as opposed to, or in our case, pick 25 as opposed to pick 35, it's probably not a lot in it.
Yeah.
You know, and then the difference between pick 30 and pick 40, probably not a lot in it. So you always feel like towards the end of the first round, unless there's a specific player that you want to jump up and get, or the player just happens to fall to you, that there's always value in trading down there. But I have a sneaking suspicion, and I don't know why, and generally I don't like to do this because I don't like to use draft capital. There's just something in my head, and I don't know why, that I've got a sneaking suspicion that they're going to jump up a few spots to try and get the defensive player that they want, cornerback or safety corner, right? And there's only one safety who's played corner in college who could be worth that value, but there's two or three corners, right? I've got a sneaking suspicion that that's what they may try and do.
Yeah,
but you know, I really just don't have any real gut feeling as to what they will do. Like I say, my general feeling is once you get beyond pick 20, then you're in trade down territory.
Yeah, so I guess the punters out there will know once that if we don't trade up, then you're sort of thinking, look, go to bed, because the Packers are not going to be picking at 25.
Yeah, well, I think the things you'd be watching for at the top of this draft is, do four quarterbacks go early? We know three are going to go early, and I would be pretty sure actually that the fourth one goes early. Does a fifth one sneak in there before the Packers pick? How many wide receivers go before the Packers pick? Because if that number increases to four, and does a fifth one slip in there from somewhere, then all of a sudden better players are going to slip to the Packers. So if you take it that the Packers is picking at 25, you want more of those quarterbacks and more of those wide receivers. You want Brock Bowers to go as well. You want all of those guys to go before the Packers pick.
It's fascinating. It's the psychology, isn't it? I mean, that's how the Bears got psyched out of the Patrick Mahomes pick and the Mitch Trubisky pick. And, you know, all of those picks all happened because there was a run on certain positions, or there was rumors going around. And then you've, you know, Schefter dropping all these sort of rumors and lads hitting bongs before the draft.
Well, teams panic, don't they? Teams panic, don't they? So when there's a run on QBs in particular, at that position, teams, you can visibly see them shaking in the war room, can't you?
Yeah.
And you see guys coming off the board that have no right being at that position. So, let's hope that happens, and there's a run on QBs, and there's a run on wide receivers, and the tight end goes, and maybe there's another one, and the Raiders will pick some guy off Peter's board from number 96, and that happens, and then we've got...
Yeah.
But it will, won't it? It will happen. Yeah. It will. Yeah. They do it every year. Something will come from left field, and then all of a sudden you've got two or three players at 25 that are on the Packers board, and then you just stand pat. But you just don't know until you get to sort of 15, 16 what's going to happen to you. So
it's going to be absolutely fascinating, and it's another one of those drafts which is, you know, for the Packers has been, there's always positions of need, like, you know, with tight end last year and safety this year. But generally speaking, you know, the Packers are well set at most spots this year. And so because of that, that puts you in a really good position, because you don't have to take a guy at this position and you don't have to take a guy at that position. You know, yeah, you want that second safety, of course you do. But most of the other positions, you know, you don't have to take a wide receiver. But if one fell to you, well, you know, you've got potential there. They don't have to take a running back. But if the right guy was there in round 2, 3, 4, you could take him. So they're in a great position from that perspective.
Yeah, it's a different feel this year, doesn't it, compared to previous years? There's a lot less complications and holes to fill. I think they've got the number of picks added to the fact there's no real positions of desperation could be a really sort of good mix for the Packers, couldn't it?
Yeah.
I have to say, I mean, if that's one thing that stands out in Gutekunst's tenure, is that he doesn't like to be caught with his trousers down when it comes to the draft. You know, he tends to sign people, doesn't he, before? And obviously we don't make splashes, but he tends to have just enough to make teams sort of think, they're not desperate for it, which gives them more leverage then when it comes to trading. But look, that was fascinating. There's offense in the books. Next week, defense, the week, and then it was only about 2 days after that, then we're going to have our special teams. We're going to zip through that, and then we're going to talk all the wheeling and dealing that could potentially go on, and some surprise shock picks as well. But we have the two draft experts on, the draft guide author, Peter Jones at the ITH Hedgehog on Twitter or X, and we have Apuli Shrew, Andy Davies, the draft guru as well. Cheers, boys, for coming on, and we'll talk to you in 7 days.
Thanks. Go back home.